Okay, so we're in the middle of the description of Shlomo HaMelech's building of the Beis HaMikdash. We saw last week, especially Hashem reminding Shlomo, we had that pause in the middle. The Navi described the physical building, the stone that went into it, and then the Navi takes a pause where Shlomo gets a message from a Navi, because I'll say Achiah Hashiloni, to remind Shlomo that as impressive as this building is, and as important as this building is, ultimately this is a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that means that if you keep the mitzvos, everything's going to be great, and if not, this whole thing is a waste of time. So all that being said, right, all the important caveats about how ultimately what matters is Shmiras HaMitzvos, and later on, especially towards the end of Bais Rishon, where Bnei Yisrael are really going to be way, way, way too into the Mikdash itself, as opposed to the message behind it. If it's out for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the Shechina is out, then it's just a building. Right, and Yirmiyahu says at one point, Mikdash Hashem, Mikdash Hashem, Mikdash Hashem, kind of mocking the Jews who think that the building has intrinsic sanctity. And the Nevi'im are saying, no, right? What matters is the message that was given to Shlomo. The house is nice, but ultimately, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need your house, right? We lain for Rosh Shabbos, for Haftarah for Rosh Chodesh, right? Yeshaya. You know, Hashem Eizeh Bayis Asher Tivnili. What house could you possibly build for me? Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, if all of those caveats and limitations and reminders there that the ultimate purpose is to be a house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we still should appreciate that the Navi here very clearly thinks that the undertaking of Shlomo, the construction of the Mikdash, is a wonderful, fantastic, titanic achievement. And we can tell because of the depths of the detail to which the Navi goes into in describing the construction of the Mikdash. So we're not going to do this the way we normally learn the regular Prakim and Navi, where we have, the source sheet and the different Mefarshim, and we go, much more slowly through to get a real clear picture. We could spend forever on the different opinions as to every single detail of what's going on. The goal for this year is going to be to try to go a little bit more quickly through the description of the Mikdash in Perek Vav and Perek Zayin, with two real goals. One goal will be to get at least a working knowledge of what the Mikdash looked like. You know, if the Navi is spending so much time and attention on this, so at least we should, have some basic sense. And the other goal for us is going to be to extract some interesting insights along the way. So I'm gonna load up just the psukim, and we're gonna go through the psukim with some comments as we go. Okay? Let me figure out if I still remember how to do this. This at least, all my limitations. Screen share, I think. Maybe not. Where's our this one? Okay, one second. Wrong one. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. All right. So just to remember, right, last left off, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, the word of Hashem that came to Shlomo. I think the Abarbanel thought that this was like a brushback to Shlomo. He's not getting the message directly. It's coming from a Navi. That ultimately, this house that you're building, imtelech bechukosai, so then everything's going to be great. Veshachanti b'zoch b'nei Yisrael, v'lo azov v'es am Yisrael. But it's going to depend ultimately on the observance of the mitzvahs. With all that done, with all that said, what does Shlomo pull off? But even Shlomo habayis v'ichalehu. Shlomo builds the house and he finishes it. Now, where we're standing now, the beginning of the parak was the stone, the actual physical structure. So Pasuk Tes Vav tells us that after they built the stone, Vayiven Eskiros Habayis Mibaisa Betzalos Arazim. So they lined the inside of the whole Beis HaMikdash with panels of cedar wood. The Dat Mikra commentary points out that the way the Navi describes this is not that Shlomo is attaching. It's not that he has stone walls and he then, glues or nails whatever wood to the stone. Rather, this is a separate structure. It perfectly fits. The wooden paneling perfectly fits the inside of the Mikdash, but it is designed so that it would stand on its own. You know, Chazal said that the Aron Kodesh was three boxes in one, right? There's a golden box, and there's a wooden box, and then there's another golden box, and they perfectly fit together. That basically is the whole Mikdash. There is the stone building, and then with cedar wood, they have this perfectly fitting structure right inside. Right? The detail it takes to get down to the millimeter, the perfect coverage is immense. Now, why does he have to do that? If you have a stone building, why do you have to have a wood building inside? It seems like there are two reasons. One reason Rashi quotes is, as we're going to see, Shlomo is not going to be content with having super fancy stone and then super fancy cedar wood, which comes from Lebanon. But then Shlomo is going to go and basically plate the entire interior of the Mikdash in gold. So Rashi says that if you are plating with gold, it is much better. The gold will adhere much better if you are attaching the gold to wood than if you are attaching the wood to stone. Okay? Having never done that, I'll take Rashi's word for it. The other reason it seems that Shlomo would want to have a separate wooden interior. Again, no one's going to see this wood, right? It's going to be all covered in gold. Is that, as we'll see later on, the Pesukim we're going to describe, Shlomo is not only going to have fancy, perfectly fitting wood for every single panel, the whole wall, floor, ceiling of the Mikdash. It's going to be 3D. There are going to be carvings in there of different designs, which are three-dimensional. If you want to do, you know, three-dimensional woodworking is going to probably come off looking much better than three-dimensional stoneworking. Similar to that, we're going to have this wooden layer. Okay, now the Navi, where does this wood come from? So for the most part, this wood comes from cedar wood, right? Arazim, the beautiful cedars from Lebanon, which is the whole deal that Shlomo made with Hiram. Remember Hiram, the king of Lebanon, the king of Tzur, that little island off the coast of Lebanon, where Shlomo will provide Hiram with food, and Hiram will provide Shlomo with lumber. The men are cutting down the trees. They're sending them down the Mediterranean to Yafo. They're then bringing the logs from Yafo over to Yerushalayim. It's taking, there are 30,000 Jews who are involved in this, right? Remember, 10,000 a month, they're on rotation. So that's the Arazim. Now, Vaitzafes Karka Habayis, Bitzalos Broshim. The Navi says that he has cypress wood on the floor. Why would you use cypress on the floor? Apparently, one of the suggestions out there is that cypress is a little bit more durable. Cedar is taller. Cypress more durable, so you want to have a floor which is going to be people are going to be walking on all the time, so that they're making out of cypress wood. Okay, I looked online in case you're interested. There are some obscure, amazing what you can find if you look for it. The things that people are interested in, but like lumber blogs, which talk about, you know, different qualities of. So as I found, it was like BrazilianLumber.com or something, talking about when you want to use your cedar wood and when you want to use your cypress wood. So you know, until this very day. These discussions are being had. You know, they could have just asked Shlomo HaMelech, because I'm sure with Shlomo's wisdom, he could have told them better than Google. But okay, that's what we had access to. Okay. Pasuk to Zion. So now, again, right, he's building the 20 amos that are the back of the bais. The 20 amos that are the back of the Beis HaMikdash, that is the Kodesh HaKadashim. In the Mishkan, the Kodesh HaKadashim was 10 amos. In the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKadashim is 20 amos. Because basically, the length and width of the Mikdash are double that of the Mishkan. Now, the pasuk at the end here has an interesting line. It says, "Ve'even lo mi bayis ledvir lekodesh hakadashim." So here they translate the dvir as the inner sanctuary. However, Rashi points out the word dvir has two meanings. It can depend on the context. It can be shorthand for the kodesh hakadashim, but also it can mean the partition that partitions off the kodesh. That's the room where the menorah, the shulchan, and the mizbeach hazav are from the Kodesh HaKadashim. That's where the Aron is. Now, last week, Parshas Truma, we learned that what separates, what partitions off the room with the Aron from everything else. Same thing we have in every single shul. You have a parochas, right? You have a curtain, which does the separating. Torah calls it the parochas hamasach, the parochas ha'edus, the parochas hakodesh, but it's a curtain. However, with the large and permanent Mikdash, Chazal explained, Shlomo did not make the parochas out of curtain. Rather, the paroches, the partition, was made out of stone. The Gemara in Bava Basra on Daf Gimel has a drasha that you have a choice. Either you can separate, you have to separate off the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that has to be separated from everything else. Literally, Kodesh means separate. So Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, is like the separate from the separate. So you have to have some partition. Gemara has a drasha. Either that partition can be made out of curtain, like they have in the Mishkan, or it can be made out of stone, which is what Shlomo has, this devir, which is separating it off in the first Beis HaMikdash. By the way, in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says, they go back to the Mishkan. They go back to having a partition made out of a curtain. The reason is that as immense as Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash is, the second Beis HaMikdash and the later one, the one built by Herod, is even bigger. And that one is so big that it wasn't able to support a wall like Shlomo built in the first Beis HaMikdash, and so they go back to having the curtain. Okay, fine. That's that over there. What that is called, by the way, if you ever come across the term, you'll know. Rashi quotes it over here. That partition in the Gemara is called the amatraxin. Rishonim argue what amatraxin means. Traxin ama is because it's an ama thick. Traxin. One of the views is that it means like a it's a compound word of something meaning inside and outside. So it was the ama of a stone that's separated between the inside and the outside. Okay, fine. Moving on from the Kodesh HaKadashim, so the next pasuk tells us about the Heichal. That's in the Mishkan, the equivalent of the Kodesh. That's where again the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbeach are, and it is 40 Amos. Right? In the Mishkan, the dimensions were 20 Amos and 10 Amos for the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadashim. In the Mikdash, it's 40 Amos and 20 Amos. Again, everything is doubled. Great. Pasuk Yerches, the Erez El Habayas Penima Miklaas Pika'im Uvtirei Tzitzim. So Mefarshim really work hard to figure out what exactly this means. But Mikla seems to mean that it was braided. So you have the different panels, and all of the 3D woodworking that's done was done so that it looks as if it's all fit together, right? All the different panels, you woodwork in one panel, and then they all are connected. And the designs are the designs of tzitzim, and the Mefarshim are pretty confident are flowers. Pika'im, it's unclear what that is exactly. It seems to mean something which is breaking forward. So one of the interpretations says they say knobs, whatever knobs are. Dan Mikra says maybe it was closed blossoms. You have closed blossoms and open blossoms. Bottom line is, 3D designs all along all this wood. Right? So we have the stone, we have the wood, we have the 3D designs on the wood. The Nabi tells us, Ein even nira. You can't see any of the stone, right? So the wooden paneling is perfectly covering the floor, walls, and ceiling of the mikdash. You never would know that there was stone on the other side, right? As you said, it's a whole, an entirely separate interior structure. If you could wave a magic wand and all of the stones would somehow vanish, the mikdash would still stand. The wooden interior structure would still be standing. Okay. Now, Pasuk Yates tells us we turn back to the Kodesh HaKadashim. Not surprising, the first part of the Mikdash we want to look at in detail is the Kodesh HaKadashim, the whole point, the raison d'etre, the whole reason why the Mikdash exists. Okay, fine. Mikdash tells the Gemara tells the Pasuk tells us, Vaitzapeu Zahav Sagur. He plates the whole thing. The whole thing is plated with gold. Now, what does it mean? Gold, sahav sagur. So I know the word sagur. Sagur means closed. You look here in the translation, they translate it as pure gold. So, okay, I get pure gold. Why is it called closed gold? So, the Gemara is a nice explanation. The Gemara says, there are different qualities of gold. When the best quality of gold is available, it is so rare that this comes on the market. When the best quality gold is open, you know what all the other goldsmiths do as soon as that comes on the market? They close their shops. Because they know I'm not doing any business today. Everybody's going to the man who got his hands on some Zahav Sagur. So it's called Zahav Sagur because that's the gold when it comes available on the market. Everybody else just closes up shop because they know that they're not going to have any customers today. The most valuable form of gold, Shlomo is using that. And it's not just like, when Moshe Rabbeinu builds, well, it's a little something actually, but he's plating the entire Kodesh HaKadashim. Okay. He then goes, Now, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis, there's some stuff that's a little bit unclear, but basically you put it together, and the Navi tells us that Shlomo is plating not only the interior of the Kodesh HaKadoshim with gold, but you get to Pasuk Chaf Beis as Kol HaBayis Tzipa Zahav, the whole entire Mikdash. So again, that was 60 amos we said, right? 40 in the Heichal, 20 in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So to just imagine, how much gold is required to do this. We're just spending and gold and no holding back. Okay, Pasuk Chaf Aleph tells us that they have chains. He has chains which are spread across in front of the Devir. Why would you draw chains across? As a way of reminding people that they should not be ever crossing to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Only one exception, the one time all year long that those chains will be pulled back, will be on Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol has to go in. Okay, in the Mishkan they didn't need that because Moshe Rabbeinu could go in whenever he wanted to. But here, this for the rest of the year, we have the chains blocking it off. Okay, fine. Navi then tells us something kind of odd in Pasuk Chaf Beis. So the Chol HaMizbeach asher ledvir tzipa zahav. The whole Mizbeach, which was by the inner sanctuary, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was coated with gold. So a couple of questions. First of all, the Mizbeach HaZav, the golden altar, was made by Moshe Rabbeinu out of gold, right? So that's called the Mizbeach HaZav. So why does Shlomo have to take that Mizbeach and plate it with gold? It already has gold, right? That's one question we can ask. Another question we can ask is, why is this called the Mizbeach for the Dvir, for the Kodesh HaKadoshim? This Mizbeach is not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This Mizbeach is in the Kodesh. It's outside with the menorah and the Shulchan. We know the only utensil you have in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the Aron. So why is this called the Mizbeach Asher LeDvir? So let's take apart those questions one by one. Regarding the question of why Shlomo is coating this with gold once again, the Dat Mikra quotes the Vilna Gaon. Seems like the Vilna Gaon is very excited about this whole parak, lots of stuff to say and all the intricate mathematical details, etc. But the Gra points out, and this will actually be helpful for us in a little bit, in the next couple of psukim, we talk to the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kruvim. The Gra points out, Moshe had this Mizbeach. It was one amma by one amma. So proportionally, you had a 20, a 10 by 20 Kodesh in the Mishkan, and you had an amma by amma Mizbeach. Well, what does Shlomo do? Shlomo comes in and he doubles the proportions of the Heichal. So what's going to happen to the Mizbeach, the visual image you're going to see? It's going to look tiny because the room around it has gone from being this big with the Mizbeach to being this big with the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach, they burn the Ketores every day, is going to look tiny. So what does Shlomo do? He just doubles its size. He adds a wooden layer around the top of it. And then he then replates that wooden layer with gold. So just like Shlomo is doubling the dimensions of the Mishkan, here he literally takes the Mizbeach and he doubles it in size. We have on the inside, if you had X-ray vision, you'd see Moshe's Mizbeach over here. And now it's been doubled by Shlomo in order to fit proportionally. Okay, so that's to answer that question. Why is the golden Mizbeach being plated with gold? Regarding the question of why is it called the Mizbeach, by the Dvir, by the Kodesh HaKadashim. So it happens to be, this is a perfect parsha for us. When you get to, what are the Divrei Torah on Parshas Tetzaveh? So you have two categories of Divrei Torah this week, right? One is the Divrei Torah on the Big Day Kahuna. Well, I guess what you have all the Divrei Torah about why Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the parsha. Okay, but besides those, so you have the Divrei Torah about the Big Day Kahuna, and then you're kind of stuck because all the utensils were covered in Parshas Truma. All of the Mizbeach symbolizes this, and the Aron symbolizes that, and the menorah symbolizes that, all that we did last week. Then you get to the very, very end of Parashas Tetzaveh, and we have one utensil over there, and that is the Mizbeach HaZahav. The obvious question is, why did the Torah take a time out until it described everything else, and then come back and say, oh yeah, we forgot one of the utensils, the Mizbeach HaZahav, which is there inside the Kodesh? So the Sepharno basically has the answer. There's a lot more to say about this, but basically, all the other kelim, he says, are there to prepare the Mishkan to be ready for the Hashras Hashchin. You have to have an Aron, you have to have a menorah, you have to have a Shulchan. Okay, the Mizbeach HaZahav is the response to the Shechina. the Ketores we offer, the only reason we're coming here to offer Ketores is as a response to the Shechina. Once everything else is done, then we come to the Mizbech HaZav and offer the Ketores. Similarly, says on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol goes in, and what does he do? He goes in before the Shechina, and then he offers the Ketores. Ketores is always the thing you offer before the Shechina. The Shechina is there. We respond with Ketores. That's the case on Yom Kippur. That's the case every day. Therefore, the location of the Mizbech HaZahav has to be, and the Pasuk actually in Parashas Tetzaveh says this explicitly, the Pasuk in Tetzaveh says that the Mizbeach is right opposite the Paroches. You have the menorah on one side, you have the Shulchan on the other side. The Mizbeach is smack there in the middle. Fine. It's the response to the Shechina. So it's right opposite the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why, by the way, on Yom Kippur, what does the Kohen Gadol sprinkle blood on? He sprinkles blood on three things when he goes in. First, he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he sprinkles the blood on the floor right by the Aron. Then he goes a little bit backwards and he sprinkles blood on the Paroches, which is connected to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then he goes specifically to the Mizbah HaZav. He goes to that golden Mizbeach. And then he sprinkles blood on that. Refersh explains the whole process here is taking the experience of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and gradually bringing it outside. So he goes to the Paroches, which is, separating Kodesh HaKadoshim, but therefore connected to it. Then he goes to Mizbeach HaZav, which is farther removed, but also connected to it. And then he goes outside. Okay, so that's also once again reflected over here, that idea, Parshas HaShavua, that the Mizbeach here is called the Mizbeach Asher Lidvei. Okay. Shlomo then goes and he does something very strange. You hear something really cool that I saw that I'm excited to share. So Dami says, Vayaspa Dvir Shnei Kruvim. Shlomo makes two Kruvim. Now the Kruvim we know, the Kruvim are the images of the Malachim with wings. Chazal say they have the faces of children, which are on top of the Kapores, the cover of the Aron, right? Their wings shelter cover the Aron Kodesh, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu hears the voice of the Shechina, right? Moshe hears the Shechina coming to him from between the Kruvim, right over the Luchos. For some reason, Shlomo decides to make a new pair of Kruvim. The obvious question is why? We're not getting rid of the first Kruvim, right? The Aron Kodesh is going into the Beis HaMikdash. So why on earth is Shlomo making another set of Kruvim? Not only is Shlomo making another set of Kruvim, but look at the attention to detail that the Navi gives this. One, two, three, four, five, six psukim. And at least one of them is extremely long. So what's going on? Now, these Kruvim are huge. The Kruvim are 10 amos tall, and each of them is 10 amos wide. Each one of them has a wingspan of 10 amos. 5 amos per wing. 5 plus 5 equals 10. So the Navi explains once you do this, it perfectly covered wall to wall the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now again, the detail to the millimeter. These Kruvim are perfectly aligned so that when the Kruvim when their wings were spread, Vatiga Knaf HaEchad Bakir. So one wing touches the wall, the other wing touches the buddy, right? And you have the other Kruvim over here. Between the two of them, you have 5, 5, 5, 5. That's 20 amos, the whole width of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, what's the point of this? What's going on? So Rav Yitzchak Levi, who was in Gush when I was there, has many, many, many articles on the Beis HaMikdash. So he quotes a sefer which has a fascinating, fascinating explanation of why Shlomo has to build this second set of Kruvim. In order to set it up, I'm just going to stop the screen share for a second and bring us over to a Gemara in Sukkah. Just give me 1 second. Let's move this out over here. And let us go to. No, not you. Go away. You, right. Screen. What's this just got? Stop. Here. Screen share. There we go. Okay. So, Gemara in Sukkah is trying to figure out how tall your sukkah must be. Minimum height, sukkah, remember? 10 tefachim, right? Sukkah can be 10 tefachim tall. How do we know that? There's no pasuk that says that. So how do you know 10 tefachim? So the Gemara spends a long time explaining how we know that the minimum rishus hayachid, the minimum individual domain, is 10 tefachim tall. Gemara ends up saying we know that because the kruvim were 10 amos tall. We're 10 tefachim tall, and the kruvim were sochich, right? The pasuk says, porasim bechanfehem al hakapores. They were sochich, like schach. They covered with their wings the kapores, the top of the aron. So if the floor, right, is the top of the aron, and here are my kruvim, and their wings are being sochich, so this, what's the minimum this can be? 10 tefachim, right? That's the kapores. The top of the wings, which are called schach, is 10 tefachim. Fantastic, wonderful. So just like those wings that are 10 tefachim tall are called a schach, so too your sukkah, your schach, has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim tall. And I got plenty of sukkah divrei Torah about the connections between a sukkah and the kruvim and the mishkan and the sanctity of a sukkah. And great, okay, it's Adar now, but we have months to prepare for sukkah from this right here. Mar asks though, how do you know that the kruvim are 10 tefachim tall? There is no pasuk that says that the kruvim were 10 tefachim tall. So Gemara, after spending a while trying to figure out from something else, so Gemara says, Elami beis olamim gamar. We are going to derive from the beis olamim, the eternal house, i.e., the beis hamikdash that Shlomo builds, that the kruvim were 10 tefachim tall. How do we do that? Let's see. So Gemara says, Dechsiv, Vabayas asher bana hamelach Shlomo Lashem. Shishim ama arko ve'esrim arachbo u'shloshim ama komaso. So the house was 60 amos long, 20 amos wide. Those dimensions, as we said, are double the Mishkan, and then 30 amos tall. Interestingly, in this regard, Shlomo decides to make the Mikdash three times as tall as the Mishkan. Okay, double the width, double the length, triple the height. The height of the Mishkan is 10 tefachim. The height of the Mikdash is 10 amos. The height of the Mikdash is 30 amos. Okay, now again, trying to figure out again, how are the Kruvim 10 tefachim tall? So we start by saying the Beis Hamikdash is 30 amos. Okay, Uchsev Koma Sakruf HaEchad Eser Ba'am. Each of Shlomo's Kruvim were 10 amos tall. Okay, so how do the Kruvim of Shlomo help us with the Kruvim of Moshe? Besanya, there's a brisa. Ma matzinu beveis olamim. Just like we find in the Beis Hamikdash, Kruvim bishlish habayis hein omdin, that the Kruvim stood to a height which was one third of the Beis Hamikdash. Beis Hamikdash is 30 amos tall. The Kruvim are 10 amos tall, so that's one third. Okay, that math I can do. Mishkan nami, kruvim shlish habayis hein omdim. So too, the kruvim stood to a height which was one third that of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Take my word for it on the math. The Mishkan is 10 amos tall. A third of 10 amos is 20 tefachim. So that means that between the Aron and the kruvim, you have 20 tefachim. So if I take off the Aron, which is half, so it's half of 20. 10. Good, right? So bottom line, we learn from there that the Kruvim of Moshe were 10 tefachim tall because they stood at a height of one third of the Mishkan, just like Shlomo's Kruvim stood at a height of one third of the Mikdash. Okay. Now we can ask, how does the Gemara know that the Kruvim of Shlomo were the same height percentage as the Kruvim of the Mishkan? And what is the significance of the fact that the Kruvim of Shlomo were the same percentage as the height of the Mishkan? And here, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi quotes the source. I don't know who the author was, but it's a fantastic, fantastic pshat. It says, in general, I'm going to stop sharing. Okay? It says, in general, what's the significance of a third, the fraction one third? So one third is the biggest fraction you can have, which is less than half. Right? If you want to have less than half, but have something very big, you're going to go with a third. So the significance of the Kruvim being a third of the height of the Mishkan is the whole idea of a Mishkan is torn between two messages. One message is this is a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? The Shekhinah is going to reside among us. At the same time, we recognize that this whole enterprise is kind of ridiculous because the real abode for the Shekhinah is in Shemayim. And what we're building is kind of a joke. So what do we do to capture that? We specifically build the Kruvim to fill one third of the space of the room, right? So it's less than half, right? We know the Shekhinah goes all the way up to Shemayim. We're gonna give our spot for the Shekhinah, right? Our Kruvim, where the Shekhinah resides, we're gonna give that the biggest percentage we can have, which is a minority, and that's gonna be a third. Now, once that's the case, if we understand that's why in the Mishkan the Kruvim are one third of the height of the Kodesh HaKadashim, now Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash, and Shlomo has a problem. Because if Shlomo just brings Moshe Rabbeinu's Aron in there and then walks out, what are you going to have? You're going to have this vast, 30 amma tall Kodesh HaKadashim with this tiny Aron sitting on the bottom, which is like swallowed up. You could barely even notice it. So therefore, he suggests, what does Shlomo feel like he has to do in order to demonstrate that same message? He builds a second set of Kruvim with the same percentage of height that the other ones have. So Shlomo can have his cake and eat it too. We have the original Kruvim of Moshe hovering over the Luchos, right? And that Kedusha is fully there. At the same time, to capture that same message, it's not like a tiny thing. We really are striving. We are being as ambitious as we can. Shlomo, on the one hand, is as ambitious as he can be with this Mikdash, while acknowledging that it is not the true, it's not Shemayim, right? Hashem doesn't actually need this house. We're not providing God with his needs. The way to do that is to build a very large second set of Kruvim, which captures that exact same proportion of one-third. That's the explanation he quotes for why Shlomo has to build these, and I thought it was brilliant, and I was excited to share. Okay. Let's go back and cover a little bit. So, ooh, I need to plug this in. Just one second. Okay. One other cool detail, by the way, about these Kruvim, the Malbim points out that it sounds like the Kruvim were able to be foldable. The Malbim makes that suggestion. Not only are they huge, and not only do they fit perfectly with each other, but then it sounds like these are foldable wings. Like I guess if it's a real as if it's a real wing from a real Malach. Pretty cool. Okay. Let's go on. And not only does Shlomo have the Kruvim, but just like in the Mishkan, now people don't really notice this so much because for some reason, there are no Divrei, there are Divrei Torah on all the utensils in the Mishkan. We never have a Divrei Torah on the curtains or the fabrics for the most part. But the Torah tells us that they, in a few spots, there were Kruvim that were woven and embroidered in the Mishkan itself, right? You have Kruvim that are embroidered on the Paroches. You have Kruvim embroidered elsewhere as well. So Shlomo does the same thing. Shlomo is not doing embroidery because the Mishkan is cloth, but the Mikdash is not. Shlomo does carvings of Kruvim and Timros and flowers, right? So the whole entire Kodesh has carvings of flat. It's beautiful. The flowers, the palm trees, the Kruvim. So you know exactly what this is about, right? The whole idea. It's as if there are Malachim all through the Heichal. Okay. Gold. Even the floor is gold. So the description, the brilliant shine, right? The light that's there, the glow of the Mikdash. We saw last week the fancy windows that Shlomo put in. The Abarbanel said that these are windows with glass. So it's blindingly bright, it's beautiful, it's stunning. Okay. Then Shlomo does something interesting. I haven't seen anybody talk about this, but I have a theory about this. So I want to toss over. Pasuk says, Ves Pesach hadvir asa dalsos ase shamen ha'ayel mezuzos chamishis. So Shlomo makes doors for the entrance into the Kodesh HaKadashim. Hades' doors are made out of olive wood. Olive wood, apparently, I checked this again on the lumber blogs, is woodworkers like olive wood. You're not going to use olive wood for like heavy building. Use olive wood for artistry, for design. So the Kruvim earlier were made out of olive wood, and these doors are made out of olive wood as well. The problem is there should be no need to have doors into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Reason why, the Gemara in Yuma points this out. We're going to see this referenced in a couple of Prakim here on the Navi, is that the doors to the Kodesh HaKadoshim are always open. Always open. And the why are they open? The There was a curtain, there's a small curtain, which was there to cover the entranceway. Remember, we said in the Mikdash, there's no major, it's not all curtain, it's mostly divided by an amma thick, massive stone wall, but there it was a curtain that was spread across the actual doorway that the Kohen Gadol could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The poles of the Aron were pushed forward. All the other poles of all the other utensils, as Bnei Yisrael walked through the desert, so all the other poles they put away. Once the menorah is brought into the Mikdash, unclear if the menorah had poles, but if it did, you don't need them anymore, right? The Shulchan, the Mizbeach, you're not schlepping it anymore. So I need poles. You don't need poles. You put the poles away. But the Torah says for the Aron, that's a whole other shear, but not for now. The poles never, ever, ever leave the Aron. So the Gemara explains that they actually pushed the poles all the way far, right? If originally, here's the Aron, here are the poles. So when they brought it to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they pushed the poles all the way forward so that they would protrude, right? Here's the paroches. So they want the poles to protrude, to push against the curtain so that everybody could see them. You can't actually see, but you could see the protrusion of the badim. The Gemara says it looked like the breasts on a woman, dadim shel isha, just there to symbolize the nurturingness of Torah. And Shlomo talks of this in Shir HaShirim. Talks about the Torah nursing Moshe and Aaron, us nursing from them. Now, the problem is, if the Kodesh HaKadoshim is always open, and we always want to have this idea, right, that the poles are poking through, and you can always see, if you look very carefully inside, obviously we can't go inside, but you look, you can always see the poles of the Aaron poking through, and it's always open. Why do I have to have doors? What are these wooden doors doing? They're never closed. So I have to be there. I have my amatraks, and I have that stone partition with the entranceway. I have the curtain covering the entranceway with the poles poking through. Why do I have to have these wooden doors that are covering it? I haven't seen anybody address this, but I think the easiest answer is that what is the best symbolism showing the fact that this passageway is open? Right? If it was closed by a curtain, so if you have something closed with a curtain, then it looks closed. But if you have big wooden doors that are open, and all that's blocking you from seeing the Kodesh HaKadoshim is this thin paroch, this thin curtain with the poles of the Aron like poking through, like breaking out, that really drives home the symbolism that it's so close, right? So the whole idea of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's trying to do two things at once. On the one hand, it has to be totally separate. It's the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's separate. We have a huge stone barrier. Torah says to have a paroches. Shlomo draws chains across. Only one time a year can anybody go inside. Aaron, the Kohen Gadol on Kodesh on Yom Kippur. It's totally separate. Kodesh HaKadoshim, separate of separate. Same time, this is the Kodesh Baruch Hu's house. It's the base of Mikdash, and it dwells among us. Veshachanti besocha. We want to have that feeling of being close, even as we have that feeling of being removed. So we're going to have that separate Kodesh HaKadoshim, but at the same time, we're going to make these doors that are always open to really give the feeling as if it's so accessible. I think that's my suggestion, which hopefully somebody else says. But, if it's wrong, what are you going to do? Okay, just to go through the rest of this, more quickly, because we're almost at the end. So Shlomo makes doors for the entrance to the Heichal. Again, description of the folding, very intricate engineering and architecture. Again, Kruvim and palms and flowers are designed everywhere. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Then outside of the Heichal itself is the courtyard. The Mishkan has a courtyard. We have to have a courtyard for the Mikdash as well. That's where the Mizbeach is, the big Mizbeach, where Karbanos are going to be offered. That's where the Kiyor is. And this as well, Shlomo builds with three rows of stone and then a lining row of wood. Dat Mikra explains you have to have all that stone because without a ceiling, it's much more shaky, right? A ceiling is a stabilizing piece for a building. So you have to have three thick rows of stone, and then they have the wooden barrier. And how long it takes to build this whole thing? So Shlomo begins this in the fourth year, right? The fourth year in Ziv, which we said was Iyar, and he finishes in the 11th year in Cheshvan. So it took a total of basically 7 years to build the Mikdash. Now, just to get a sneak peek of the next parak, which we got to do this one more time next week. So we're going to shift for a little bit to Shlomo's palace. This we're going to go through very, very, very quickly. But it's one thing that Chazal noticed right away: how long does Shlomo take to build his house? 13 years. So he takes 13 years to build his house, 7 years to build the Mikdash. One could have interpreted this critically: why is Shlomo spending more time on his own house than on the Mikdash? However, as Chazal basically point out, the Mikdash seems much more intricate and fancy than the palace. Chazal explained that Shlomo rushes. He is eager. He wants to build this Mikdash as quickly as he can. His own palace? Okay. We all know how construction goes. Foreman's on vacation, contractors taking some delays. Shlomo's not going to move heaven and earth to get that done as quickly as possible. The Mikdash? That has to happen as soon as possible. All the stone, all the gold, all the wood. Shlomo is blitzing. Move, 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 move. And he gets that done in 7 years, right? So you see the detail that the Navi gives to the Mikdash. And by the way, we're not done. Because again, just to wrap up the sneak peek, the palace is going to, we're going to finish the palace in what, like 13 psukim or so? Yeah, 12 psukim. So that's it. 12 psukim, palace is done. Wait a second. I look on the side right here, the very cool Ala Torah. This parak goes on for like ever. It goes on for like 53 psukim. What's going to happen from parak Yud Beis and on? 40 psukim, back to the Mikdash. Because now we're going to describe all of the different utensils that Shlomo built. This will really do much more cooking next week. But like, just goes on and on and on. Look, we had Shlomo's palace. Bloom, done. Back to Mikdash. Mikdash, 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 Mikdash. Almost done. Mikdash, Mikdash. Batisham kol hamlacha asher asah ha-melech. So a real, real sense of the love and care and concern and dedication that Shlomo has, and that the Navi wants us to take away, right? This is a huge deal, and we should understand it as such. So, it's definitely a ton more to say about this, but hopefully this just gave like an effective overview of what the Mikdash looks like, the sense of care that Shlomo has, and the sense the Navi wants to appreciate that. And again, we got to enjoy these prakim. Times are good. Times are not going to be good for much longer, I say from Malachim. So let's enjoy these prakim. Times are good. Everything's wonderful. Shem, see everybody next week. Thank you so much for coming.